up and dancing, that's for sure. So a very warm welcome. Thank you very much indeed for joining us here this evening for what I hope is going to be a very lively debate. I'm Catherine Garrett-Cox. I'm a member of the Supervisory Board of Deutsche Bank, and I am joined by an extraordinary panel tonight. I have to say that when Michelle asked me to come and moderate this session, and she told me the title, I thought, oh no, are we really going to have to sit and debate this topic that really should have been long sorted out? And then she told me, and she showed me the list of the panelists, and I thought, oh yes, I think we're going to have an interesting and lively debate. And I think, having spoken to everybody, what we really hope tonight, and I want to make sure that we engage the audience in Q&A, and hopefully that at the end of this evening, you will all leave with a sense of some practical suggestions of what either you may want to do differently in your own organizations with some best practice that some of our panelists will share, or perhaps if you are an aspiring woman who doesn't think that having it all is possible, that we give you some top tips and hopefully give you a sense of purpose that actually you can have it all. But just before we get into the panel perspective and discussion, could I just ask for a show of hands on the question? How many people in the audience actually think that women can have it all? Okay, not bad. Okay, we have a few non-believers we need to try and convince. I'm loving the front row. Excellent. Thank you very much indeed. So just in terms of framing the conversation, in terms of whether or not having it all is possible, I mean, clearly we can go in lots of different directions, and what is all anyway? But I found, as I was digging around in my research, a great quote from Michelle Obama, so I felt that was quite topical this week. And she once said, "The truth is that women can do anything they want. There is absolutely no limit on what we can achieve. And I hope that every young woman approaches life that way." So I thought that was good and inspiring stuff for us to start off with. And I think that really having it all is a very personal thing. And for me at least, it's really about having an opportunity presented to you and then grabbing it. But clearly, timing and luck and good fortune also play important aspects in all of this. And as a working mother, I have to say that the role of the media have a lot to answer for in some of these conversations. And I'm sort of fairly bored with being constantly labelled Catherine Garrett-Cox, mother of four. I don't recall seeing a headline saying, father of five elected as next president of the United States of America. So I think we have a little bit of work to do here. Anyway, enough from me. I'm going to briefly introduce each of our panelists and ask each in turn for their perspective and perhaps some storytelling that they're prepared to share with you this evening. But in brief, immediately to my left, we have Hamza Yousef Hansen, who's the president of Zaytuna College in the USA, who's going to give us a very interesting global perspective when it comes to his turn. To Hamza's left, we have Marie-Gabrielle in Eichenfleisch, who's the State Secretary for Economic Affairs for Switzerland. And given that we have the very stark statistic that only 15% of women in Switzerland work full-time, I'm going to ask Marie-Gabrielle to give us a bit of color around that. To her left, we have Cynthia Castro, who is from Costa Rica. She's a global shaper and works for an organization called Reinventing Business for All, so that sounds suitably inclusive. Just to demonstrate that we haven't just got one man on the panel, we have enlisted the wonderful Tim Ryan, who is chairman of PwC in the States, who again, PwC have been incredibly progressive in some of the policies and initiatives that they have been instituting across their organization. So Tim will speak to those. And last but absolutely not least, Maysoon Odeygangat, who's the co-founder and director of Nissa Radio Broadcasting from the Palestinian territories, who I know is going to give us a very interesting perspective on how some of these conversations are both similar but very different in how they're applied in the Middle East. So perhaps to kick us off, Marie-Gabrielle, given that we are graciously being hosted by you here tonight in Switzerland, perhaps may I ask you to make some comments in terms of your perspective on this topic. Is it possible? What is all anyway? And what's going on in Switzerland?
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for the occasion to have this panel. I must say I shared a little bit your view when I read the title. I thought, oh no, once again. But actually, it's a good question. And I think it's a question that every woman has to ask herself. And my perspective is, if a woman wants to have it all, then she must have the opportunity to have it all. So I think that's the basis. Now, coming to Switzerland, this 15% looks, of course, a little bit gloomy, but the situation is less bad than it seems. We have actually a very good participation in labor of women in general, actually one of the highest in Europe, with about 82%. But we have a low mother's participation, which means that there is something, has something to do with how you organize your life as a mother. And it is true, it is about 15% full-time, but the participation of mothers working part-time has really increased a lot in the last year. So we see a trend in the right direction. Now, the reasons, I think, is not only one reason you can give to explain why this is like this in Switzerland for the moment. I think there are three reasons. One is certainly cultural. And if you look at Switzerland, you see differences in the French-speaking part and in the German-speaking part. The French-speaking part, they look more towards France, where many, many mothers work full-time. So they tend to be more active in labor market as mothers working full-time. Then there is the whole issue of labor hours, of organization of your work. And there in Switzerland, we are still, you know, we're still a long path to go. The schooling system, we can go certainly a little bit more in depth in that issue. But I think there is still a lot of things to do. And this is on the cantonal and on the community level. So there is some work to do. And then there is the tax issue, which is on one hand the whole revenue issue. As couples, as married couples, you may have disincentives. And the deductibility of childcare is also not really what it should be. So you have many different issues, and I guess for everyone in every situation it looks a little bit different why we face the situation we face today. I think I would leave it at that for the moment.
Thank you very much indeed. Cynthia, I'm going to turn to you next. So give us your perspective on this. You're probably, I would hasten to add, I think you're probably the youngest on the panel, so perhaps you bring the youth view. What's your perspective on this? What do you want and hope for as you progress through your career as well?
I believe women should have it all, have the capability of having it all, but don't have it all right now. We are still prisoners of our culture, both men and women. And I bring the topic of men because I think it's very important when we discuss gender, talking about masculinity also. Our culture still teaches us that men have certain roles and women have certain roles. So that makes us not be free to become the best version of ourselves with freedom of whatever we want. So still, men have to prove they're man all the time and be provider, protector, have this emotional shield. And women still that's what society asks them, should want to have kids, should want to get married, should want to be in charge of things at home. And if she's not, she does receive a punishment from society of not fulfilling this role. So the way we are educating our culture of what it means to be a woman and to be a man is not letting anybody have it all, because you have to follow some rules, and that you can see in the gender gap report makes us not have the same pay, the same salary pay, not participate equally in economics. So it's one of the two genders is having more responsibility of being the provider, while women do want to be the provider also, where men are not having the role as fathers as the same way that women are having it as mothers. In Costa Rica, we have a study, and women are spending around 37 hours a week on domestic work versus men 15 hours a week. So we don't have it all yet. And I think it's important to be realistic in order to be able to make a change. And I think what we aspire as global shapers is that we can change this. Right now, there's a majority of men in Davos. We saw the statistics. I think it's 21%. It's in a newsletter they sent us. But global shapers, the young generation, were 50 and 50%. So I think we do want to relate in a more equal way. And I hope that we can also bring this to other generations.
Well, I think you make a very good point, but I think that I think we got the balance right tonight on the panel. So, yeah. Hamza, I'm going to bring you in because we can't possibly do ladies first. So, would you share your perspective on this topic, please?
Well, first of all, as somebody who's lived in some of the poorest countries in the world, I mean, the idea of having it all is just quite absurd for a lot of people on this planet. A lot of women, for instance, have no access to birth control. Birth control enables women to have choices that that are not available for a lot of women on this planet. We have places where I was in West Africa, for instance, where you have extraordinarily high birth rates in many of the women. Also, the idea that women don't work if they're not in the quote-unquote labor force to me is an absurdity, because it's quite clear that women do actually more work than men, whether they're in the labor force or not. Even in the United States, which is a relatively progressive country, although there's some indications now maybe that it's not as progressive as we thought. But nonetheless, even in the United States, women are earning, although it's getting better, about, you know, between 70 to 80% of what men are earning in the same fields. And so I think we've got so much disparity on the planet, but fundamentally, roles have changed significantly. I concur with Ken Wilber, the philosopher, who argues that the idea that women were oppressed for 10,000 years and suddenly these suffragettes worked it out in the 19th century is an absurdity. Anybody who's read Shakespeare knows that women have always had power. They've just manifested that power very differently in cultures. But things have changed. The idea of having strength, physical strength, is really not that important anymore, and it's going to become increasingly less important with automation and the fact that we have so many tools and mechanisms that make essentially physical strength obsolete. And when you remove physical strength, although there are now many women much stronger than many men, when you remove physical strength, women can pretty much do everything that men can do. And so really, I think the question, can women have it all? In certain societies, I think it's possible. It might not be all at the same time, right? But certainly in many, many cultures, this is not true, because we're still very sexist in some of the most advanced cultures. And certainly in most parts of the world, sexism is a profound problem, and as somebody who's lived in the Middle East and Africa for a considerable amount of time, I'm very aware. And coming from California, and being raised by a very liberal mother who worked, it was quite a shock for me, being raised in this egalitarian worldview, to suddenly see, wow, John Lennon had a song, "Women are the of the world, and if you don't believe me, just look at the one you're with." And so I think there's a lot of truth to that, unfortunately.
Well, I thank you for your comments, and I think I would certainly agree with you that it's not always possible to have it all of the time. Actually, on my way here, I bumped into a great friend and fellow young global leader who is an incredibly successful journalist in London. And I said, "Oh, I'm running. I'm doing this panel on whether women can have it all." And she looked in sheer panic at me, and she said, "All? No, I never have any time to have my hair done. And I thought, okay. And she said, you know, I'm juggling nannies and children and plane travel. And she said, what gives is when do you get your hair done? When do you ever read a book? And when do you ever see your friends? So that was her perspective, and I bring that tonight. But to your point about, you know, women in the workplace, and certainly I've heard a comment before that nothing works if women aren't at work. Tim, I'm going to turn to you because I know that you have a very high percentage of women in your workforce, but you're also doing things to really engage the younger generation. So what's your perspective on this topic, and what will you share with us tonight?
So my first perspective is it was great to see so many hands that said we believe we can have it all as women, and that because I think we're way more glass half full than we have empty, not to say we don't have problems. But also, as a father of six with three daughters, if I told them they couldn't have it all, they'd kill me. So they'd come right after me. So certainly they can have it all. But I think what's important is the perspective of what do we mean by what does all mean? And this goes right to your point. We have to be realistic. And whether it's male or female, having it all is almost impossible, especially in the business world. And I'll bring it to the area that we play in. And what we've tried to do at PwC is have people have realistic conversations. So I had shared earlier with Catherine, my best friend, who also happens to be my age, 51, he made a decision early in his career that he wanted a different life. He didn't want to rise up the executive ranks, and he was home for my son's 14th birthday was yesterday, and I'm here. So clearly I don't have it all, but I've made a choice. And what we really encourage our folks is make a choice, and either choice is okay. But in life, we make choices. And if we want to try to have more in advance in business, male or female, we should have those opportunities. To that point, it's up to leaders like myself and others to create those opportunities. But what was equally important as individuals is we have to make a choice around what we want, because I do think it's unrealistic to say that we can have it all, because all does imply making every hair appointment, every birthday, every hockey game in my case. But the reality is we need to balance that if we want to grow. At PwC, what we've tried to do is put in programs that give people the ability to have it all, recognizing there are societal differences between men and women, and there are perceived biases to do that. So like Costa Rica and like this program here, our hires are effectively 50-50 women. And what we've done is we've put in programs and incentives to make sure if a woman chooses to advance her career, recognizing she's bucking up against centuries of bias in the system, that she can have it all.
One of the things that we talked about earlier, though, is that does this whole concept of the sort of ever, you know, I suppose, ever rapid need to bring women into the workplace actually end up upsetting the men? I have had a number of conversations with typically men in their 50s who just look at me and say, I just want to be you. And I said, really? And he said, I just want to be a woman because you are getting all the opportunities at the moment. And if I'm 51 and I'm perhaps, you know, unhappy in my current job, no one wants a white middle-aged man anymore. So is that a risk, do you think, Tim?
Yeah. I think it's a huge risk.
We want you. Want you tonight.
Yeah. particularly, I mean, again, I'll go to a real story. So I was elected CEO of PwC in the U.S., and I took over on July 1st. And so one of the few privileges you get when you're the CEO is you get to pick your team. And so I announced my team in July, and my team is the most diverse team we have ever had in history, and I would say among the top in corporate America in terms of diversity, 44% minorities, 35% women. We have people who are from Pakistan, Belfast, UK, people who grew up at PwC, didn't grow up at PwC. And what's interesting is when I announced that, I was very, very proud. But I also had several people, several of the white guys that I grew up with, pulled me aside and they said, you realize we're upset. They said, we get the broad issue. We get the need for us to lead. We understand the fact that it's good for business. But where's the opportunity for us? What happened to us? We thought we had a shot at those. Didn't matter to them that these people were equally qualified. Didn't matter to them that these people had also paid their dues. They were wondering what it meant for them. And one of the most important lessons we've learned at PwC is an organization to truly promote diversity on a sustainable basis has to be growing. Because if you're growing, you're creating opportunities for everybody. And if you lose that white male population, especially in a place like the States where you've had it going on for so long, you ultimately won't get the change you want in the organization on a sustainable basis. So one of the most significant pieces of personal advice I give to somebody who's looking just to start your career or understanding where to go, it's one thing to have a tone at the top, which is very, very, very important in messages, but what's equally important is the organization growing. And if the organization is growing, then the question is, where's the room for advancement? Because those decades and centuries of what I'll say, white males having the opportunity to move ahead, that could stymie that advancement. And that's one of the things that we learned, getting real down and dirty.
Thank you. Yeah. And Maysoon, turning lastly to you in terms of your perspective on this, as you said, you come from the Middle East. A lot is similar, a lot is very different. Please share your story.
Well, obviously, even though I come from the Middle East, but women issues are all the same globally. I must say I was a little bit shocked with this title, Can Women Have It All? And I went to my son brainstorming when we were traveling here, and I asked him, he's 10 years old, I said, do you think women can have it all? So he said to me, yes, provided they don't compete with men. So I thought that was a very good answer. He's here, by the way. And he told me not to quote this. That's amazing, Adam, because that's exactly the whole idea is equality between the genders. We don't compete with men. And the question is, do men have it all or can they have it all? I think we are all talking about the same thing. But if I go back to the Middle East, can women have it all in the Arab world? I think, yes, they can, provided they personally want to have it. Secondly, they have the right support on the family basis. And thirdly, on the institutional level, they have the right laws and regulations. Because unfortunately, our labor force, when it comes to women, whether mothers or not mothers, it's very low compared to this part of the world. We have an unemployment rate, which is very bad amongst women in Palestine and even the Arab world, even though they are very highly educated. So if these problems are solved, yes, we can have it all. We have lots of mothers now working. The reasons for working could be also not out of they want to do it, but there's an economic factor here. You see lots of mothers working in this part of the world because they are forced to work. Mm. In conclusion, we can have it, provided that we have the right support. And we don't. And we have the males as partners with us on all these things.
So there's the perils of telling your mother something just before she's about to get on a panel, right? But just turning to, thank you, Maysoon, just turning to some of the common threads in the conversation. If we're sitting here as extremely fortunate people to be in Davos this week, I think part of my take is that it's our responsibility to also create these opportunities. So perhaps I can look for a volunteer in terms of how do we actually create these opportunities? If this is an ability that we're leaving behind to let women have it all, Hamza, how do we create these opportunities? You're my volunteer.
Well, I think one of the most important things is raising the consciousness of people about this problem. We have a lot of historical baggage that we carry with us. We also have most of the religions on the planet have certain views embedded in them, not always from their texts, but from how they've been interpreted through men's eyes that have led to certain attitudes. In one religion, which is a great world religion, in a certain caste, the dharma or the practice of a woman was to serve her husband, and when her husband died, she was also she burnt herself on the sacrificial fire with her husband. So her life ended with her husband because her spiritual dharma was literally over. In the Muslim world, I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about the religion and about the role of women. It's interesting that the founder of the religion was an employee of a woman. Khadija was actually the employee, and she was a very successful businesswoman that supported the Prophet Muhammad. And so it's interesting that a religion that's founded by somebody who was in the employment of a woman ends up becoming a religion that very often has serious problems. So I think raising the consciousness of people about the very problem of attitudes towards women and what we now term sexism, the idea that men are inherently superior to women. This is unfortunately an attitude that is still quite widespread on the planet. And as long, I think, as that idea is there, the same problem we have in race, we were talking earlier just about race, the same problem we have in race, the idea of racial superiority, of white supremacy, there are still people that believe that and will look to certain aspects of the world to prove that, just like they'll look to certain aspects of the conditions of women to prove the same. So these are problems. So I think that's where it would start with education is extremely important.
And Marie-Gabrielle, I mean, what about the Swiss example? I mean, how do you think about changing attitudes and also creating these opportunities? Because I presume there's an economic imperative for this.
Yes, I wanted to say, well, besides the whole education issue, which is still very important, even in countries like Switzerland, I mean, you can look at also at from the point of view that you say that an economy needs all the possible workforce in order to be able to grow. And Switzerland is a good example of that. I mean, we lack a lot of labor. So we had a lot of immigration, and actually we may use a little bit better the potential we have in Switzerland rather than having too many people coming from outside. Not saying that we don't want anybody having from outside, of course, but if we try to, you know, have not only more women, this is one of the initiatives, but also, you know, continuous education. You have also to ensure that people after 55 stay in the labor force, all these kinds of measures. And there women come in too, that you can actually improve the basis of your skills and like this also improve the growth and the participation in the economy. And this is one of the reasons why now in my state secretariat we have one of these initiatives which also touches on women but on all the other aspects as well, so that it doesn't become too much, you know, a question of men and women. Because I agree with the comments made, you have to be careful that you don't lose the men, you know, on your way of improving life or the participation of women. You have to make sure that you keep them both on track because you need all of them. But I think that if you say that, you know, it's not only because you would like to improve the situation of women, but you really need them, then maybe, you know, you come to a better explanation and a better sensibility also for families, for children. We see, for instance, in Switzerland, we have many women in tertiary education, but most of them are in health or are in social sciences and not in the technical sciences. That's where we lack labor force. So we try now, and I try to be quite effective, I try to tell all the young people, I don't have children, but I try to tell the young girls, you know, go into engineering, into mathematics, into whatever is technical. Of course, it's wonderful to learn languages and philosophy and all of that, but that's not what we need in Switzerland. So I think to push a little bit women also to get into areas where they are maybe not so present today, that is also a good thing to ensure that they can afterwards also be, you know, integrated into the workforce.
And thank you. And Cynthia, perhaps you might share with us some of the work that you're doing in Costa Rica in terms of holding people to account and creating an accreditation. Yes. And how quickly do you think we can move the needle on this topic?
So I agree with what you were saying and also Tim before about gender parity being good for economy and being good for business. There's a new concept that the Harvard Business Review has been using that it is that companies can be or gender blind or gender smart. And there's a lot of research now that shows that if you have more gender parity inside your business, you're going to be able to reach better out to your market because more women are making consumer decisions. So what we're doing in Reinventing Business for All is we made an alliance with the government. The government has a Ministry of Women, INAMU, and they created a gender parity certification. So we made an alliance, and we're helping them to apply it in the business sector. So what we do is we study all the gender gaps in a company. Where are there gaps salary-wise, maternity, paternity leave, sexual harassment, equal opportunities, the recruitment process, because we have to recognize if we're gender smart that we grew in this culture Therefore, we have biases. Even if we don't want to, we do, and there's a lot of studies for that. So, for example, in the recruiting process, just by the name of the person on the resume, you already have a bias. So a company that wants to be gender smart will take away the names from the resumes and just put a number. Candidate number one, candidate number two. Take away ages, take away anything that will give you any bias. And that's a way you protect your company and reach more parity and have also a better return of investment because you become more profitable. So what we do is we find the gaps, we help them close those gaps, and then a third party comes in and does an audit every year in order for that company to obtain the certification. Then the next part we need to do that we're not doing now is we need also for consumers to understand what that certification means. Because just as we right now are used to look at something that we're buying and say, oh, this is protecting the environment, so I'm going to buy this product, we should know if a company is or not working for gender parity and prefer that company. So a good thing that we're doing to advance is, even though public policy is still not where it should be, for example, we don't have a paternity leave in Costa Rica. You don't have to give a dad one single day. We do have maternity leave. Companies are giving paternity leave in order to obtain the certification, even though the law is still not there yet. So there's other ways of advancing than just waiting for public policy to advance.
And perhaps, Maysoon, if I can turn to you. So, I mean, you made a very clear point that you think women can have it all. So within your own organization, are there practical things that you've done to actually put your, if you like, your money where your mouth is on this point, things you're prepared to share?
Yes, absolutely. Maybe before I give examples on the work, how we do it with mothers and women, because we mainly employ women in our radio station, because it's all about women empowerment. I just want to elaborate on something that Yusuf spoke about, and that is the importance of education at the lower levels when it comes to gender or equality between men and women. It's very important to raise up kids and boys at the school level to understand that we are equal, we can do it, and so on. Also to clarify the issues that concern religion, where we have these misconceptions that religion is an obstruction or a hindrance towards having this, because as you mentioned, truly, the first businesswoman was Khadija, who was the Prophet Muhammad's wife, and she set an example. On the other hand, also, when it comes to women's employment, and I totally agree with Marie Gabrielle, because there is a problem in my country, women tend to have jobs which are very restrictive, like teachers or nurses, and for them these are very good working hours. They don't go beyond that, and I think now that we should work on having them enrolled in other sectors of the economy so that we have them integrated as well. When it comes to my own world, in my radio station, most of the women we employ came in as single girls. Now they're mothers of one and two children, and we work on very good conditions for them. We provide maternity leave as opposed to other probably organizations in the country. We try to give them, you know, this 1 hour leave to be with their children. We try to be as much as possible flexible when it comes to our own internal policy and regulations. So I think we set a good example when it comes to having mothers at the organization, giving them flexible hours in order to have it both, the career and being a mom at the same time.
Thank you. And Tim, I wanted to turn back to you around Cynthia's point on unconscious bias, because I think we've probably all been guilty of making snap judgments about people. And I'm aware of a great friend in Mexico who's now looking at unconscious bias, and she's working with a number of employers to actually do interviewing behind curtains. Because I think there is a probably human nature fault that sometimes when you look at people, you think your face doesn't fit, irrespective of whether or not they've got the right skills. So I think, you know, that's kind of an interesting...
Yeah.
Yeah.
To
to prove that point, there was an interesting, I think it was Malcolm Gladwell that pointed that out, about orchestras were mostly male-dominated, and then when they started doing the behind the curtains, suddenly the women were playing as well as the men, and it really changed the demographics.
It's amazing, but luckily they kept the curtain open tonight, so I'm afraid you've got to look at us, but Tim.
Yeah, so just a couple of quick comments on what's been said already, because I think we can all agree there's a big opportunity for further women advancement, and that's why it is important to keep talking about this. I think we can all agree that the business proposition to do the right thing is overwhelming, the opportunity, and plus it's the right thing to do. So the real question then gets is, how do you solve it? How do you make it better? Regardless of where you're starting from, in some places of the world, the starting point is a lot lower, some places higher, but regardless, we can do better. And as we look at it from PwC, there's three things we're really focused on. One is the right programs, and you've heard a lot from different panelists around having the right programs. So at PwC, we have a number of programs. Frankly, maternity leave and paternity leave have been in place for years and decades in many cases. What we've focused on is a program we call Full Circle, and that program allows women to leave and spend up to 5 years outside of the firm and come back in the exact same spot. Mm. We, 5 years ago, set out to change our culture and develop a culture of flexibility for all that allows people to work when they want to work, how they want to work, and we've adopted new technology to let people actually go do it. And that cultural change took 5 years. 5 years ago, flexibility was just another word at PwC in the English language. Today, it means something. We survey our people, and we change the culture. So one is programs. The second one is education, which you talked about. And for PwC, we've done two things to drive at education. One is we've gone very long on unconscious bias. So we've worked with Dr. Banaji at Harvard. And for the last 10 years, we've been developing and redeveloping our unconscious bias training. One of the things that we struggle with a lot at PwC is, do you make it mandatory? And the trick with mandatory and not mandatory, if it's mandatory, people may view it as, well, I have to take in, their heart's not in the right place. So we've tried to figure out what's the best way to do it. What we recently announced is that for every one of our new hires coming into the firm, male or female, and we're 50-50, you have to take unconscious bias training because it's part of your development as a professional at PwC. So it's not like you must do this. It's, we want you to do it, and you have to do it if you want to be a leader, if you want to be a leader in the community, society, and at PwC. What we also require is that every one of our new promotees, and we promote roughly 7,500 people a year, we require everyone, our promotees, to take unconscious bias training, because when you get promoted, by definition, you're leading more people. You need to understand all different perspectives, gender, sexual orientation, race, and the like. And so that's been a huge success for us. But we also have a responsibility to lead much broader than that. And what we will do in March is we will make our unconscious bias training available for everybody, for society at large, because part of our responsibility is the people at PwC, but part of it is society at large.
Thank you very much, and we look forward to reading that research in March. Mary Gabrielle, have you ever felt that you couldn't have it all, and what did you do about it?
Well, like I think everybody who tries sometimes to, you know, get a new job, I failed once in a while, but I didn't think it was because I was a woman specifically. Maybe that played also a role, but it was not the only reason. And that was it. Actually, it was something that was, you know, that could happen. And the effect was that I actually thought, well, just you see, next time it would work. Mm-hmm. And I think this is also something I tell now my young women who are in my state secretariat. I have seen, you know, we have many more women now. Not because of me, but because they have done their studies, they come, and especially more women getting into the middle management. Mm. And this is a good thing. But you have always to, you know, to tell them now, you know, there is a new vacancy. Why don't you look at it and give them a little bit of help and motivation so that they actually apply. And I have never to do that with men. They always apply for everything, and, you know, they do that very well. But women need a little bit more of motivation. And this is something where I really see a difference. I probably it's education, maybe it's also, I don't know, whether it's more a way a woman acts. I'm not quite sure. It's not so much my type, but I know someone like this. And there I think you can do a lot in terms of, you know, especially if you're a woman, you can, of course, tell other women, you know, try. It will work. Don't worry. Even if once in a time you have setbacks, this is part of the game. It happens to everybody. It's not because only because you're a woman. Maybe this is part of the issue, but not necessarily, and hopefully not the only reason. So this is, you know, there is kind of coaching that you need to do a little bit. And I think this is, I find it for myself, I find it extremely rewarding when I have, you know, when I see that all these young women come up. And I think this is actually one of my tasks to ensure that, you know, I see a lot of, especially because I was saying, you know, we need this skilled people making careers. And I think that is a wonderful development.
I mean, I think your point about women don't put themselves into a position of sort of putting themselves forward is absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. I think I once read a statistic that said that, you know, generally speaking, men will put themselves forward for a role if they think they're, you know, 75% right for the role, mm-hmm. And women almost wait till sort of 95%. Right. So, you know, it's a really tough thing. And in my own experience, generally women don't ask for promotions and they really don't like asking for money.
That's been shown. I think it's been shown that a lot of the actual disparity between the wages is a result of men tend to be more aggressive. Mm-hmm. Testosterone does add an advantage in that area because men tend to be more aggressive about those things. But we've also seen in studies where most of the really, really powerful women in the United States, many of them came out, and Hillary Clinton's a good example, in all women colleges. And so it's been shown that they feel more confident. They're not so conscientious about being in with the men in the same room. So I think there's a lot to be said about that. That your brain sex is a good place to start a book just about the real physiological differences between men and women, which was done by a female neuroscientist who set out to prove that there was no difference, and she ended up concluding that there actually was a considerable amount of difference just based on our different physiologies.
I mean, I think that's absolutely true, and I think the other thing that I constantly hear, and I want to test with a couple of members of the panel, is the importance of role models. Right. I mean, I know from my own experience that when I've moved jobs, quite often, unfortunately, a lot of the women that I've recruited also leave. And when I speak to them about why is that, the kind of common thread that I hear is I look up through the organization and now I don't see anyone that looks like me. And I think that's a real, you know, that's a real problem and a real sadness. So I think, you know, it's sort of almost beholden upon each of us to really try where we possibly can to be role models. I don't think you have to necessarily be female. I think you can actually, I think it's not just about, you know, being a female. It's about leading perhaps with female traits. So it's not necessarily about your gender, but it's about your perspective. So Maysoon, may I ask you, in your career, did you have a role model, and what sort of difference, if you had one, did it make to your life?
My role model was my mom, to be honest with you. And my mom was a single mother who was able to raise up three kids or four kids under very dire circumstances, and she was able to have a job at the same time and so on. So during tough situation, she was able to have a career and be a mom and a father at the same time. So to me, that was my role model, which made me what I am today, I must say. In my professional career, I did not really have anybody specific, whether male or female, but I took all the strength that I needed to be a mother and today a manager, I must say, from my mom. That was my role model, to be honest. But if I want to also, I liked your question, which you addressed to Marie-Gabrielle. Did you have it all at the same time? I must say that I had some moments in my life where I didn't have it all. I wasn't a manager and a mom at the same time. I was a manager sometimes without being a mom because as we saw in the video earlier, there has been some moments where there are guilt feelings that can happen, managing a radio station, being at work for long hours, and having your kid with a nanny or at the nursery isn't a nice feeling. So having it all at the same time was a mission impossible. And I tend to agree that probably sometimes we need to have it on stages so that we can have it all rather than having it at the same time.
And I think you make a massively good point, because it is about timing. And I think very often it's easier to have it all the older you are, as you actually sort of start to move through the system. So if you've had children at a relatively early age, it is a little bit easier.
Absolutely.
But I was going to ask you, so do you therefore think that having it all dooms working mothers to a lifetime of compromise?
I don't think so. I don't think it would be a life open thing. But I mean, there is a certain time where you have to compromise the motherhood for your career, as it happened with me. And then after that point, you feel that what you did was for your son and your family. So because kids grow up at a certain point, and then, I mean, at a point in their lives, and then there is no need for you there. So the compromise happens at a certain time in your life, and I think you should be aware of it as a mom and as a working person, because if you are aware of that, then you set yourself very nicely and your mind frame is set rightly that it's happening for only a short period of time, after which I go back to my job and my son or my daughter is grown up and they can proceed with their lives. So that was my own personal experience, and I think I am a good mom, if Adam agrees, and a good manager of the radio station, and we're contributing very well also in terms of our economy right now when it comes to our project. Thank you.
And what about role models for you, Cynthia? Does it matter? Have you got one?
Of course. Well, I would just like to add to what you were speaking about motherhood and having it all. It's interesting because they asked me to write an article in Costa Rica about this, about why women were not getting married before 30 and what was going on and how we were making our decisions. So since I had to do this from the psychological perspective, I started asking friends and did some focus groups and some interviews. And women were telling me, well, I feel like I have to choose. Like, I feel like I have to choose between being a mom or my career. And it's pretty realistic when they were telling me, they were like, well, look at the law. Even though if I find a partner that is willing to do the 50% of the work at home, when we have a baby, the law will only let me take some months off to take care of the baby, and it won't let him take some months off. So reality is, it's not going to be 50-50%. And the feeling that you do have to choose is tough, because it you know that at the end of the day, you are choosing. So I've had a lot of role models in my life from since I was a kid. I had a grandmother that divorced in a time where you could not do that. That was really punished by society. My grandfather, her husband, was alcoholic, was not a good parent. And she became one of the first lawyers of the country and board of directors of a bank, which was not usual. So I have her. My mom is an entrepreneurial. That the first time that we were in a bad economic situation and I was in high school, she was, do you really want to go to this parties and do you really want to go to that trip? Here's a recipe of brownies and fund yourself, like make the money to go. And that was the best lesson I've had in my life. Like, you can really get out of any situation by yourself. I had a very interesting role model yesterday in one of the sessions, and it was a YDL, because she was there and her spouse came with her and was there supporting her. So And a lot of global shapers were talking about that after the session. We're like, wow, it's cool to see that that can really happen, because normally we see a lot of wives with their husbands here who are part of the forum, but seeing also other women that manage to have their career, have their spouses support them, and also have their family life, that's inspiring for us that are the new generation that are feeling that we have to choose between two things.
Well, I must make a point of introducing you to my husband after, because he's sitting in the second row. Exactly. You know, behind every woman is a great man.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought it was behind every great man was a great woman, and behind every great woman was herself.
No. Partners are extremely important.
Yeah.
Extremely.
Behind every great man's actually a woman rolling her eyes.
No. Usually. No, I just, we've spent obviously a lot of time talking about, the gender issue in this, and the courage sometimes that we need to basically have within ourselves to do something slightly out of context, out of the box. What's the most courageous thing you've done around this topic, Tim?
So, one of the things, as I mentioned, I became CEO of PwC on July 1. So the first week of my role as CEO, we had in the United States, we had race really was starting to percolate, and it had really become a major issue. And we had, on that Thursday evening, we had shootings and killings in the city of Dallas in Texas that swept across the country and literally was on the media 24/7. It bothered the supermajority of the United States in some way, shape, or form. And as a new CEO, 4 days into my tenure, the question was, what do you do? And we have 50,000 people in the United States, knowing it would be on people's minds. And as kind of has been inferred, it's a very sensitive topic, and at a very raw moment where it was very emotional and could go bad if you addressed the issue. I ultimately made this decision to reach out to our employees that day. And I reached out to them electronically and received over 1,000 reach outs. And the emails all had a similar theme, but the theme came back is summarized best in one email. And one email said, when I showed up for work on Friday morning, the silence was deafening. Meaning here we are, one of the most progressive organizations in the United States and globally around diversity and inclusion, and yet our people were showing up and not knowing what to say. And I'm 4 days in. Wasn't the plan. And so the question then was, what do you do? And I made the decision the next week, that weekend, to open up the walls of PwC to make it okay to talk about race. Now, keep in mind, we're comfortable talking about women. We're not perfect, don't get me wrong, but we've progressed so long. We're comfortable talking about sexual orientation, but on the topic of race, we weren't comfortable at a time when the country was very raw. And there was a lot of risk in that decision. Many of my advisors had suggested maybe it was too bold, it could go wrong, you could lose people, you get upset clients. And ultimately, I made the decision to do it. And on July 21st, we had the first ever day-long discussion about race at PwC. And while it could have gone wrong, it went great. And one person summed it up best. They said to me, they said, Tim, in that day on July 21st, there were more tears shed than in the 160 years we've been in business. So while we're not anywhere near solving that race issue, we've begun the understanding of what we all feel like on a topic that we're not comfortable talking about.
And Hamza, I just want to come back to something that you said at the beginning, where, you know, in your experience from your travels, big issues are created by the fact that women just simply don't have access to birth control. So just referring to the Global Gender Gap report that was published by the Forum last year, I was very struck, being in financial services, by the fact that 36% of countries represented in the report basically restrict access to financial services to women. So just from your perspective, thinking about the world at large and with the backdrop of the fourth industrial revolution, where we're obviously having numerous conversations this week about, you know, what jobs will even exist and what opportunities will exist in 5, 10, you know, 25 years' time, you know, how do we kind of tackle this access point? and
specifically
generally.
To
offering opportunities and what opportunities do exist to create better.
Well,
better
I think
momentum.
For a lot of people on this planet right now are in survival mode. That's just simply a fact. I mean, we saw the recent 8 people, some of them probably here, having more wealth than 50% of the planet, according to Oxfam. But as somebody who's lived in places where, if you look at just some of the Arab countries, you're dealing with over 25% unemployment rate, which would be a Great Depression, you know, if that was in the United States. But that's a norm in a lot of countries for males. And certainly for the women, it's even harder to do that. But I think education is also a major problem. The educational opportunities that are afforded are very difficult in a lot of countries because they have substandard education. But also for women, because of a lot of the prejudices that those cultures have about women being educated. There are a lot of men that are threatened by educated women still. And I think, you know, in the Western countries, women are actually doing better than men in many situations. If you take a country like Saudi Arabia, and I don't know if there's any here Saudi Arabians, but in Saudi Arabia, the women are actually doing incredibly well in education, but the opportunities are far less available for them because of the nature of the culture. But one of the reasons why they do much better in colleges is because they study more. A lot of it is simply because the actual society doesn't enable them to do the things that a lot of the males end up doing. And so they're more serious about their studies. And you have a lot of Saudi Arabian women with advanced degrees now. And so it's definitely changing. And these are slow, incremental changes. And I think one of the things that we have to be very wary of in the West is imposing, we have a type of Eurocentricity, ethnocentricity, that's constantly imposing upon other cultures and civilizations our view of the world. When we were Christian, we went around trying to Christianize the entire planet. Now that we're postmodern, post-industrial peoples, we go around trying to tell them that you have to be neoliberal people, and you have to. So I think a lot of people feel that arrogance that comes from us. So I think we have to be very careful. One of the things that Jonathan Haidt points out in The Righteous Mind, he's here, by the way, in a very important book. One of the things he points out, he calls the weird cultures, Western educated, industrial, rich, and democratic. And the weirder you are, the more judgmental you are about a lot of other cultures. And so I think a lot of other cultures have had enough of Western people telling them how to run their societies and how. I think we need to allow those cultures to work it out for themselves, and it's going to take some time and some humility from our perspective in the West.
I would absolutely agree with that, and I think that sometimes the innate arrogance of trying to impose things is just really very bad. I love the fact that you emphasize education so much, and given that we're sitting here in a school, what I would love to do now is to turn the floor over to you, our patient audience, to see if there are comments, observations, questions for the panel. What would be really helpful, I think, have we got some microphones roving around? Okay, so we've got some questions. It would be really helpful if you could just introduce yourself at the beginning. Could we have a microphone down here, please? And then I'll take your question. Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Linda Walker, and I have a question for State Secretary in Eichen Fleisch. Can you give us your view? Maybe, probably people here don't realize that or maybe they do, that maybe 10 years ago already Norway put quotas on the number of directors that companies had on listed companies in the Norwegian stock exchange, and now Switzerland is considering discussing having quotas for the numbers of board members of their companies. And I would like to hear your view and perhaps the view of the other participants about the idea of having quotas and whether this is going to help us in the long term.
Thank you. Great question.
Yes.
Mary Gabrielle.
I thought you should have, you might have asked it. Well, I am, to be very sincere, I'm not a friend of quotas. I think this is a very unnatural way to put women at the top. I think women will succeed, but I think something is still needed. I don't say that you don't need to do anything. So I think that you have actually on, you know, in the corporate level, you should have a sensitivity to all these questions. And I think that what we are trying to do in Switzerland also is to show best practices in different companies, especially in the small and medium ones, which, as you know, are, you know, the biggest part of the Swiss economy is small and medium-sized enterprises, and to show them what it brings if they take women into the workforce and also at higher levels. So I think this kind of moral suasion is much better than just having quotas. Also, what is now discussed in Switzerland is this issue of quota. I'm convinced it will not go through Parliament. But what may come is this issue of complain or report. Comply or report, not complain. Comply or report. That is, either you comply with a figure or you have to say why you didn't comply. So at least you have to think about it. You have to discuss this. Even this goes rather far, but that, I think, is probably still doable. But to go beyond and to just say, you know, you have quotas and then you need women. And if you look at the Nordic countries, it's very often the same women that take all these posts. You know, it's not that the most important thing is not to have women somewhere, is to take up the younger ones and to make sure that they follow up. This is, for me, the most important thing. That's why I was saying you have to, you know, coach young women to get to middle management, higher management, and then everything will evolve by itself. But if you just have, you know, a number, I don't know, 100 well-educated women, known women, and they just turn around, I think they call them golden skirts. I mean, you know, that doesn't help any younger woman to actually come to get to the top. So. Well, that's the problem. It takes a long time. I agree it takes a long time. And maybe now with this, you know, this few issues, it may be may come a little bit quicker. But I agree with you that it takes time. And this is something which also I would like to see to, you know, make a little bit quicker progress.
I would like to add to that. Transforming culture takes time. It takes a lot of time. And it has to do also with transforming symbolism and who you have as a role model for that culture you want to achieve. So quotas, they don't work all the time. I've seen cases where they don't work. I've seen cases where they're very successful. But sometimes it's the mechanism to make it faster, even when that culture is not changing yet. For me, it's been very interesting seeing in Costa Rica a lot of tech companies having quotas and therefore having to do other type of work in order to be able to fill that quota. So for example, there's a program called Mente, which is empowering girls from high school to develop apps and like to come very close to technology in order for them to start studying STEM. And that way the companies can fill their quotas. But if those quotas did not exist, probably they would have never done that effort with girls in high school.
I mean, I think what I would add is that I think the actual numbers that there are, the average female representation on boards, I think, is about 14% globally. I mean, it's really low. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's interesting because in the UK, I mean, we've made some progress. I can tell you I've served as the only woman on a public company board. Mm-hmm. And as one on a gender balance board, I can tell you what was more fun. Yeah. You can guess. I think the tipping point, the academic work tells us, is it's 30%. Mm. You need safety in numbers, but I keep coming back to what I said before. It's not just about gender, right. It's about your perspective. And I think if you've got a slightly kind of broader perspective, that can also make a real difference.
It's important, too. I mean, tokenism is very dangerous overall because I think it's not fair for the person that becomes the token person for the diversity. But what's important is educating people to the benefits of having diverse boards, including gender diversity, because our board, which has over 30%, I mean, it's clearly advantageous to get different perspectives. And women do come with perspectives that very often men tend to overlook or not consider. And so I think that just educating people about the advantages is very important.
So I think my top tip would be, if you get called up by a headhunter and they say, we'd like you for our board because we just need a woman, don't take that position. I think we had another question in the front. Could we get a mic down here, please? And then we'll come back to you. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Alim. I'm a global shaper from the Perth Hub in Australia. My question is to you, Tim. For an organization whose stakeholders, so for example, your clients who are, you know, listed on the stock exchange, in a case where your clients themselves are not diverse, how do you sell the diversity and inclusion narrative internally?
Yeah, so thank you for the question and thanks for being here. One of the things that we do and we view as part of our responsibility of solving this very, very important problem is talking about it. So today I met with six or seven CEOs just over at the Congress Center. Every single one, we had this conversation. So in half-hour meetings, we make sure we're talking about it. And it is a business imperative. Most CEOs are trying to figure out how to deal with these issues that we're talking about. And we'll sit down and we'll share our best practices. We'll listen to their best practices. We'll talk to them about programs they should have in place, how you change culture. And so almost every single meeting we're in, we're having the dialogue. And part of our responsibility with our clients and our other stakeholders, community, the investor community, regulators, is to bring this topic front and center. So what we've tried to do in PwC is, this isn't business, and then let's talk about this other stuff. This is integrated. And I would tell you, most want to do the right thing. They need help in understanding how. And so that's a big part of what we try to bring to the table. And they expect that of us. The best clients expect us to bring provocative and very interesting thinking. And by the way, we learn as well by in going through those conversations. So we integrate it in everything that we do.
Yep. Any other perspectives on that topic on the panel? No? Okay. Please.
My name is Julia. I'm a global shaper from Geneva. And I'm going back to the Swiss situation of women. We were mentioning before one of the issues is the school system, and also the fact that 40% of, on average, more than 40% of the wage of women is actually going into childcare. So what can be done from a government point of view, but also from a private point of view, to help women in a situation where schools, crèche are closed on Wednesday, there are such a long queue for crèche, and it's so difficult, and there is such a huge dropout of women after the second kid. So both from a private point of view and public point of view. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think, as you mentioned, the Swiss situation, and that's what I was saying at the very beginning. The reconciliation of work and labor is difficult. It depends a lot where you live, but in some communities it is very difficult. And I remember when I was a girl, you know, I went home, I went to school at 8, I went back at 12, I went again to school at 2, I came back at 4, and my two sisters had different schedules. So, I mean, for a woman, impossible to work like this. And this is changing, but takes a lot of time. So this, day schools that you have, where you put the kids to school in the morning and then they can stay until 4 or 5, some cantons and some communities do, some don't or are on the way of doing it. So I hope you are living in a community or next to a community where you actually will have this opportunity. So this is really dealt with on a local or cantonal level. There the confederation, the central government cannot do much, except what we have been doing, and we have been doing this several times. We give incentives for childcare institutions. And we did that now several times in order to improve the situation in communities which maybe would not introduce that themselves. The second issue, your issue of 40% going to the taxes, is also an area of work, and the government is looking at it, because it is true that in some situations, not everywhere like this, but in some situations, you know, it does not really make a lot of sense to work, because actually you have to pay so much to the taxes, and also you cannot deduct enough for your childcare. So these are areas that are dealt with. As I say, it always takes time. We are a federal country, so, you know, until it trickles down, it takes some time. But I think we are on the right path. And in this skills initiative I was mentioning, these issues are all part of it. So we have the incentive to do something, because we will have to show that we have been doing something. So I think we are on the right way, but it will still take time. a little bit of time.
Other questions I've seen? Oh, please. Thank you.
Hi, good evening. My name is Alexandra Araujo. I'm from El Salvador, and I'm a founder and vice president of Vital Voices down there. My question is for the whole panel. One of the biggest challenges that we face in El Salvador has been having the interest of men in the topic. We have a conference once a year, which we fill with more than 1,200 women. And having 50 men in the conference was a great task. And the only way we achieved that was offering them an award for their attendance. So moving forward, I'd like to ask all of you, how do we keep the conversation fresh? Because even as you open the panel, it seems like we're kind of tired of talking about women and how we can achieve greater equality. And yet we need to continue to have the conversation because we're far from it. So how do we keep it fresh? And how do we keep men's attention or obtain the men's attention on the topic as we move forward?
So you mind if I start on that?
I think it's your game.
So, I'll tell you what gets my attention.
So you got Tim's attention.
I think it's a very fair question, and I'll share with you a couple of very practical things. One of the things that we did at PwC is we partnered with the UN, and we were part of a campaign called He for She. And you can go to the United Nations website, and you can see this. And we have encouraged all of our men to sign up. And it is specifically designed to bring men into the discussion, recognizing we don't solve this problem, or said differently, take advantage of the opportunity, unless men are part of the equation. And we've encouraged on a consistent basis now for the last 2 years all of our men to sign up for that pledge and make that pledge and be visible about it. And that's one thing that we can all do. It's free. You can go to the UN website and you can sign up. And it then educates men on why this topic is so important. And I start from the fundamental premise that most people wake up in the morning and they want to do the right thing. Some of us don't know how to do the right thing. We're learning. But the he for she is a very easy, practical way we can keep it fresh and get people involved. I'll now share for those of you in the business world something we've done to keep our men involved in this discussion to help progress. So as many of you know in the business world, when somebody gets promoted, you celebrate. You say, hey, Tim got promoted. He used to work in Boston. Now he works in New York. He used to work in this division. Now he works in this division. One of the things that we realize is that if we didn't make this central, an incentive for men to be part of the equation, we wouldn't make the progress that we want to. So what we said is for anybody to be promoted to a senior level within PwC, you need to have what we call a distinctive diversity experience, which means that you need to have done something to advance the career of a minority, a woman, and help them. And then when we promote that person, we talk about it and we celebrate it. So storytelling, not only is it storytelling that then helps other people see what's happening, it keeps us fresh because you see new stories, it also sends a very clear message. If you want to progress in the organization, it's not just about the bottom line or what you did in sales or what you did in a relationship. It's what you did to mentor and develop all of our people. So those are two things that I would suggest that most of us, certainly the first one, we can all do. We get access to the internet. The second one, if we're in the business world, it's a very practical thing you can do to set the right tone in your organization.
I would like to add to that. So when companies normally ask us to do some consulting for them, it is normally somebody from HR, which tends to be a woman, and she has to convince the board of directors that tend to be men. So normally we have to confront this issue. And something we've found that helps a lot is talking about how it affects men, how this gap we have and this biases we have are affecting men, because you tend to commit to the issues that have to do with you and that you identify with. And if you feel that this has nothing to do with you, it's hard for men to get engaged into this. And there's so much information. I mean, apart from doing the business case, which is very important, but there's so much information about how masculinity and how our culture is forming men is affecting them. I would like to advise everyone to check this, the representation project. There's two documentaries. One is about females and one is about males, and it's the mask you live in and how men are trapped in all these roles of being a man and showing they're a real man. So I think that's a great way to engaging more men.
Okay. Hamza?
Well, I think a lot of it is in the mothers and how the sons are raised. I mean, I really feel like a good example of that is female genital mutilation, which is a problem in particularly in East Africa, in both Muslim and Christian and animist cultures. But it's really done by the women. The men have nothing to do with it. And in fact, I know personally, just anecdotally, men that were horrified and actually didn't want it done to their daughters. I know a Sudanese man who actually took his daughter to Europe to avoid that happening. And so I think, again, it gets back to educating the way we treat the other, the way we honor the other. And certainly women historically, I mean, honor is a big part of you know, the chivalrous idea. And a lot of that, which there's great virtue in those ideas, the idea of just honoring women. And so raising men that really respect and honor women is incredibly important. And that task is not just on the mothers, obviously, but more importantly on how the fathers treat the mothers and how, I mean, in a lot of cultures that I've been in, you know, the son never sees the kitchen. It's just the daughters are in the kitchen and they're going to serve and cook. And when the men sit down in I know a culture, I'll veil it out of generosity, but I know a culture where the women hide the meat inside the couscous because the men eat first and then the women eat after and they just want some of the meat left over for them. So these are the types of cultures that we have on the planet, and it's unfortunate, but we education.
Thank you.
Can I come?
Yeah, of course, Maisoon.
I believe in the power of media. I am a media person now, and we've been using radio to raise awareness on women's issues and equality between males and females. So it would be fantastic, I mean, if you can partner with a media outlet. And it's a long process. It might take a year or two or three, but it's very effective. And I think you can get what you want in the process. So ideally, in a situation like this, media and social media, I would say.
Now, I think I saw one hand going up at the back, if I could get a microphone to that gentleman, and then I'm going to turn to the panel for some closing remarks, if that's okay. So, sir, thank you.
Thanks for this occasion. My name is Reto Gasser. I'm just a critical WEF visitor, and I would like to ask my question in German to be less nervous.
Okay.
So I hope.
Just put this is fine. Okay.
Well, what is it necessary to have to make sure that women get a bigger piece of the pie? And what is it that they need in order to get to the courage, in order to really inject their own female properties and characteristics into the game? For example, there are a lot of different studies which point to the fact and which prove that women will have perhaps more empathy than men. And I just wanted to connect that with two issues. In this world, there are enough foodstuffs, there is enough food in the world to feed everybody. But we have an economic system in place. And as a result of that, humanity doesn't have access to something which is not properly distributed. And perhaps a less tragic example, but something that is also serious, the share price tends to go up when productivity is increased, but where also people are laid off. I hope that women would be able to find different solutions to the problem, but I wonder whether they would have the courage to go down a different path. What would be the approach that a woman would take in order to try and resolve some of these issues?
Thank you very much indeed for your question. So I'm going to turn to Marie-Gabrielle first.
Yes, I understood it directly, so maybe I can start answering.
But in terms of
courage, you know, the problems that you were mentioning, you start from the...
Maybe you could just give a summary for, because I think a lot of people didn't know what the question was.
Yes, the question was, females tend to lead or tend to act differently than men, having more empathy, you know, and other things. And why then would they react differently, for instance, in the issue of distribution of food? Would they be, I guess, more efficient or more equal? And the other one is, would they also put so much emphasis on productivity, or would other things matter more? Now, I think this is an interesting question, because you tend to say that women try to include in their thinking not only basic economic values or basic economic patterns, but also something else. And this is something which I was also thinking of. Do women do it differently? I think today everybody's changing. And maybe women have been doing this before, but I think today, if you talk, for instance, about growth, and you only talk about the growth of GDP, then, of course, you lose many people on the road. Because people think, you know, GDP growth, that's not the only thing that matters. You have to take into account what is the effect on climate change, what is the effect of inclusiveness. And I mean, what the forum does this year is, of course, to include all these areas into their discussion. And what they've also done is to have a report which includes other elements than just pure economic values into the equation. And I think, I'm not sure, that maybe this is female at the beginning, but I think it is also having more and more men being aware of that. I can just tell you, in SECO, we were having interesting packages of economic growth, and we tended to look at the growth in terms of figures. Of figure of GDP, you know, how much does the Swiss GDP actually grow? And in the latest package, which the Federal Council decided last year, we included two other issues. One is how can Switzerland ensure resilience? And these are many, many different, you know, topics. And how can it ensure that negative effects of growth can be alleviated? So this is a new way of thinking. We will see how successful we are with that. But that was very interesting to see that it was not because of me. I, of course, pushed a lot. But it was not because of me. All my economists told me also, you know, agreed that we had to be a little broader. So it may have an impact. But I think that also others, also men, are, you know, starting to think in other ways.
Thank you, Margaret Gabriel. Now, I'm very conscious of time. And I know we have literally about 4 minutes left. So we have obviously more than four panelists. So can I just ask for a quick sum up point from each of you in terms of we're walking away from here. Can women have it all? Maysoon, what's your big takeaway from this evening's conversation?
I think, yes, they can have it all. Again, provided that they have the right support. But I want to talk about the poverty, if I can, very quickly. There are statistics that show that women, that households which are supported by women are the level of poverty is less than the households which are managed by men. And I believe that economic growth can happen, poverty can be alleviated if women are more engaged in the economy and the workforce. So to sum it up, we can do it, we can do both. There are some times where we have to concede on some things, but eventually we can be both mothers and businesswomen or working woman.
Thank you. Thank you. And Tim, briefly from you, please.
Problem, yes. Opportunity, huge. Can women have it all? Yes, I think we can all have it all. And the important thing is we have to choose as an individual. When you look at where you want to work, you choose wisely. Choose an organization that's led well, choose an organization that's growing, and that's committed to creating opportunities. And if you're a leader, understand this is a big, big part of what we're required to do, which is create opportunities for everybody.
Thank you. Cynthia?
Just quickly to your question, there is data from the World Bank that shows that women tend to reinvest 90% of their income in society, education, their communities, while men tend to reinvest 30 to 40%. And this is because we are educated to live for other people, for our children, for our family, for our parents, for our community. So that's how we use our money. So I would just like to remember that the name of Davos 17 is Responsible and Responsive Leadership. And I believe that for several years now, we've been talking about the responsibility, but we've not been so well in the part of being responsive. And responsive means having an action, an answer after we know about the responsibility. So I would hope that today, all of you can leave with a reflection of what is it that you can do to be more responsive to this issue, because I believe women can have it all, but it depends, as you said before, on the support we give them to change and to break those glass ceilings that we have that are not letting them have it all right now.
Okay, thank you. And Mary Gabrielle, sorry, in 30
yes.
seconds.
I think you can have it all provided you're well supported at home and provided that you take setbacks as opportunities. Mm.
Well, I just want to say about the Swiss, the fact that 85% of the mothers stay at home.
Work only part-time.
Or work only part-time.
Yeah, 15 is work full-time. Work full-time.
But that's a lot of them are staying at home
60%
with their children.
Are working of mothers.
Okay, but part-time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I'm coming here for the last over 10 years, I'm amazed at how wonderful the Swiss people are. So I think the mothers are doing something right.
Yes,
and I think
are.
I think also the fact you have the lowest crime rate on the planet says something about your mothering skills also. Okay. So I think I just want to say it's very dangerous to denigrate the work of mothers. Mm-hmm. And I think that yes. one of the things that a lot of mothers now feel is that if they don't have a career, they're worthless. And I think that is also an incredibly negative impact. In best case scenarios, I think people should have the opportunity to do what they want. If they want to stay home with their children, they should do that. And I think, at least for the first 5 years, somebody should stay home, either the mom or the dad. But somebody should stay home because children need an incredible amount of care and concern. One of the reasons that we have so many young people now that are starving for attention, and we have a whole jackass culture in America in which people do the craziest things to get attention, I think is a lot to do with the fact they didn't get enough attention in those early years from the people they needed it from, so they go out looking for it for the rest of their lives.
Thank you. So I think in good Swiss tradition, hopefully we're finishing pretty much at 8 o'clock. Thank you for your time. Can I just ask you to show your appreciation for a fantastic panel? So thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Thank you.